Stand by for recording. You're listening to Pop, Corn, Forest. Part one.
I don't know if it'd be considered a poem. It's more like a quote. I don't know. I like all of the quotes in here. Oh, yes. The most potent muse of all is our own inner child.
Lily, do you want to say what you had
Hello.
For breakfast today?
Oh, I had leftover homemade scones by my aunt's friend and also fermented soybeans over rice and radish kimchi.
What is your name?
Lily Thorson. Oh.
It makes me think of what if we lived in a world where everyone had a music sound effect after their name.
Whoa.
Everyone
we
would
should add like a reverb to Lily Thorson.
Okay, we can make a note of that and experiment with some reverb and some echo. Where are we at right now?
Oh.
Where we be at?
I'm feeling better. This morning was rough. I was super tired, but like being out and walking and talking and the breeze and the sun and the view of the ocean is really nice. And all these puppies.
When's the last time you were on a podcast?
This is the first time I've ever been on a podcast.
Are you like, do podcasts occupy, or like any kind of like spoken word things occupy like a part of your kind of day-to-day life?
I think I have, like, a secret desire to speak on a podcast.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I do like to yap, but... Yeah. I don't know. I feel like because I live by myself, I'm kind of silent a lot, and now I'm learning, like, oh, I actually like talking.
No way.
And hearing myself talk.
That's cool. I feel strange being direct, but I'm... also asking you to say for the viewers,
oh,
like,
where are we at?
Our location.
We're although... at the Berkeley Marina. I had leftover homemade scones by my aunt's friend and also fermented soybeans over rice and radish kimchi.
Wow, that is not the typical breakfast response that one hears, especially with the homemade scones.
They're pretty good. They're like cornmeal, raisin... They're pretty darn good.
Cornmeal raisin. And fermented soybeans.
Wait, so would I create a VR movie about myself but not use my physical characteristics?
Yeah.
No, I would use my physical... Like, I would, like, have her have black hair and, like, I'd kind of make her eyes a little Asian.
Like, okay.
Yeah. But then that would also be an opportunity to perceive myself. I feel like it's so strange. Also, like, being mixed, like, half Japanese and half white, I always kind of struggled, like, just even comprehending what I look like. Like, I never, like, I lived in Japan for 10 years, and I never, like, people would instantly recognize that I am, like, not completely Japanese. Like, they would, there's, like, a term, half, like, oh, you're like... a foreigner, kind of, or like you're mixed. People would like see my face, and so I always thought I looked super white. And now that I'm in America, I'm like, I used to live in Fresno too, and a lot of people would think I was Hispanic, because like everyone in Fresno is Mexican pretty much. So they look at, like, some people would associate that with me, or like they look at me and be like, oh, I thought you were Hispanic, or like someone said, oh, I thought you were white. I was like, what? But then other people are like, what, you look Asian? I'm like, I don't know how I look. Like, everyone tells me something different. I'm like, I don't even know.
Like, let's say you went to Japan and, like, just no one ever made that mm-hmm. comment. Like, would that...
I could tell by the way they looked at me. Like, they could... They
okay.
Saw, like, just being in public or in a grocery store, like, their eyes would linger on me longer than... a normal stranger eye contact thing. I'm like, they're thinking something about me, and I'm like self-conscious, and like going through puberty at that age is definitely didn't help with like the whole self-identity thing and like people looking at me and be like, oh, your skin is so pale. I love that. Your eyes are so big. I love that.
So it would have to be, it would have to be a deeper change than like, I mean, you obviously you can't like police people's eyes and that wouldn't be the answer anyway, but like, is there another world where like, you can like go to Japan as like a person who's half white and half Japanese and just like be there without lingering eyes? I mean, I know in this world, no, but like,
I think reframing my story, like, and I have like so many tattoos too, which brands me as like not Japanese anymore. I think it affected me so much as a kid because I needed to fit in. I didn't want to stand out. But now, like, I've owned my kind of identity as I'm American. Like, I've committed to this life in the States. And so when I do go back to Japan to visit, which is something I'm, like, really emotionally preparing myself for, I would do it with, like, that idea that, oh, I'm a foreigner. I'm, like, not a foreigner, but, like, I'm American. I'm not Japanese. I'm half Japanese. That's my upbringing, but
of
me,
chronology
I'm, like,
of your
American.
Tattoos.
Ooh. Okay. Well, I lived in Japan for a while, like a total of 10 years. Moved back and forth a lot, but the biggest chunk was like middle school and high school years. So like towards the end of high school, like I would be on Pinterest, or like I'm still exposing myself to American culture through like Twitter and like the internet and stuff. So like tattoos were always on my radar. And then I'd be on Pinterest and I'd like find like these beautiful tattoos and I'd be like, oh my gosh, I want it so bad. Like, I just want art on my body. And you know, like, it's super taboo in Japan. It might be gaining more acceptance, but it's still like pretty because it's associated with like the Yakuza like gang activities in Japan. So it's like super like disgusting, you know, or like just super taboo. So, like, I had some friends in high school, and I'd be like, I really want one. And they'd be like, ew, that's so gross. Like, that's filthy. So I was just like, whatever. And then I moved out here. And as soon as...
When was that?
2018. So I was in Fresno initially because my grandma lives there. So I moved in with her for a couple months, but then I immediately was, like, working 2-3 jobs in restaurants and stuff. And I got my own apartment, and I was making my own money. And I was like, okay, it's time for a tattoo. So my first tattoo was 2018 to like celebrate. Yeah. And it was pretty small so I could like gauge what the pain and what the process would be for a tattoo. But that was like celebrating the beginning of my actual real life, like me as an independent adult. 2018, that was the year I moved to the US by myself. And then from there I was like, okay, well, I can handle the pain, like I like how it looks. I'm ready for more.
I stopped that recording and re-recorded. I mean, not re-recorded. I began a new recording. How many tattoos do you have overall?
I have no idea. Like, maybe 20.
Whoa! I would have thought, like, 8.
No. They add up. I forget about some. Or, like, they're not even on my radar really anymore. I feel like people notice my tattoos more than I do. Like, they're just a part of my body now. But all my tattoos I got when I was, like, between the ages of, like, 19 through, like, 21, which is kind of a crazy age to get a bunch of permanent ink on your body. And also, after a certain point, I got into, like, a situationship with my tattoo artist. Like, I went to different artists in Fresno. All my tattoos were done in Fresno. So, like, after a certain point, this tattoo artist guy, I was in a situationship with him for, like, over a year. So, like, a lot of the ink I received was from him, which is kind of also a stupid thing to do. Like, why are you getting this, like, permanent reminder of someone that, like, is just, like, giving you breadcrumbs? But anyways, I don't regret any of them. One of them, I'm kind of like, I don't know if this aligns with me anymore, so maybe in the future if I, like, find a cool artist, I might like not cover up it entirely, but like kind of add a different layer to it. One of the tattoos that I really think is cool is my like thigh piece, I have like this like fairy goth moth situation, and it was done by an artist friend. I met them when they were like making art. Yeah, from a friend. They were already making art, like painting and stuff, so I knew like they were like an artist. But then they got a tattoo gun to practice with. And then maybe like 7 months after they got their tattoo gun, they were like starting tattooing. They were just like starting small on their friends with like, they would design like small flash sheets that like they thought that people would like. And then I was like, hey, like you should like give me a tattoo, but like draw anything you want. And so like that was, they drew this goth moth thing. So that was cool. I like having, one of the reasons I haven't gotten any tattoos since like leaving Fresno is because like it was so nice receiving tattoos from people that I actually knew. Mm. So I already like have that, I don't know, that it like adds an extra layer of this like art that I'm putting onto my body. Just like that connection and that relationship. And also the security of like walking into a tattoo appointment and you already like have this trust in this person.
Yeah.
So like just, I haven't really had any desire to get any more tattoos just because like the search is just like, I'm like, I don't even want to do that. Like looking for an artist and like seeing if I like their artwork. And then also the money too. I'm just like, I have enough tattoos. I don't, all that effort. It's like, I don't even want to do that.
You went hard for a couple of years.
Yeah.
20 tattoos and
yeah.
Like.
And all my piercings too. I got like so many piercings during that age. I was just like in my body mod era.
Are you talking about like you, well, in Japan, that was my experience also because I lived in a really rural town. Like if I lived in Tokyo, I feel like people would be a little less so. And probably not everyone was like looking at me consciously. Like they probably weren't like judging me as they saw me. Like they just noticed something different and their eyes lingered just a little longer. And like, you know, like you look at something, you don't even realize you're looking at it.
Yeah.
But also because of, like, my personal situation, I was just super hyper self-conscious about that, especially as, like, a young girl going through puberty and, like, and things weren't good at home, so I was just, like, super extra, like, why are they looking at me? What's wrong with me? Like, you know. But now I probably wouldn't take it too seriously. I'm just like, oh, whatever. I look at people, too.
In Japan where you were?
Oh, it's called Kakizaki, or if you can't really speak Japanese, you will say Kakizaki.
Kakizaki.
But it's honestly, being on the Berkeley Marina reminds me of the town because it was right on the ocean.
No way.
Yeah, it was a beach town, but super rural. So, like, in the summer, we would get some tourists. I worked, actually. We had, like, so there was a bar, izakaya-type situation in the small little town. And during the summer, they would erect a wooden cabin building thing on the beach, on the sand, and sell, like, ramen and, like, draft beers. And that was, like, my first ever job. And I was, like, so freaking scared. Like, customer service in Japan was terrifying.
Why?
Because there's, like, so an extra level of, like, politeness and manners. I wonder how the audio experience is going to be.
This way.
Perfect. But, yeah. But in the summer, it was pleasant and it was nice. But the winter was awful because it was just so windy and we'd get, like, blizzards. Like, the prefecture I lived in is called Niigata Prefecture, and it's known for being, like, super snowy and cold. But being that I lived right on the ocean, we, like, it would snow, but the snow would not be able to accumulate because it was just so freaking windy and the wind would just, like, blow it all away. So, like, we experienced the terrible cold, but no snow and just, like, awful wind and, like our train, I would, like, take the train to my high school every day. It was, like, maybe, like, a 40-minute train ride. But, like, sometimes the train would just, like, stop, like, be canceled because, like, the wind was just so bad. And it would happen pretty regularly in the wintertime. So, like, no one really wants to live there.
Do people talk about... I can't even remember the name of the...
Kakizaki.
Do they talk about how bad it is there, yeah. Like, when they're there? Is it...
Oh, watch out. Yeah. It's generally not, like, a place that... Well, I don't think it's even on a lot of people's radars because it was just such a tiny little town. But it was nice. I lived, like, right on the ocean, so I could leave my house and be at the beach in, like, 2 minutes.
So, pretty good summers.
Mm-hmm. I never actually swam a lot, though. Like, maybe as a kid, but the older I got, like, there's just, like, no time. Because when you're in Japan and you're in high school or, like, middle school, like, you're kind of expected to be participating in some sort of after-school activity.
Just culturally?
Yeah, and if you don't, you could opt out, but they're like, oh, like...
Oh. What is it? Well...
Oh, is it compost? I think we
can go back. Oh my god, that's... Well, there's a plastic cup in it, so yeah. I'd hardly say so, with also lots of trash bags.
Yeah.
What else about... I mean, because you were there for 10 years?
Yeah, in that town... That's the town that my mom was born in. So that's where my Japanese side of the family was mainly located. But I spent 1 year living in... Saitama Prefecture, which is a lot more populated. It's closer to Tokyo, kind of-ish. And that was only 1 year, but it was pretty, like, significant in my character development, I feel like. Because I was, like, second grade, and I had a best friend. But it was kind of the time where I was realizing just, like, the economic reality of my family situation. And, like, the kind of not-so-great reality of my family situation. Because we lived in a tiny apartment, and it was, like, super messy. And we weren't... It was just the five of us without... Usually we'd live with my grandparents a lot, so, like, my grandma would be the one feeding us or, like, taking care of us. But when it was just, like, the five of us, like, my dad, my mom, me, and my two little sisters... Things just, like, went to shit, kind of. Like, we weren't fed, we weren't clothed, house would be messy, I could be out as late as I wanted, and no one would care.
I'd, like, kind of emailed you a bunch of different things, but you had, like, responded with, like, wanting to, or, like, feeling open about talking about, like, mental health and, like, your experiences growing up. Is that something that you're still down to talk about? And still,
I'm down as long as it doesn't feel like I'm, like, trauma dumping.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you don't, like, have a trauma dumping, like, vibe, like, okay. Just sitting across. It sounds like really very formative.
Yeah, so definitely formative, I would say. Definitely made me learn, or gave me a desire to just, like, be my own person just outside of my family, because I kind of rejected them so early on because they rejected me first. Well, it was, like, a very neglectful environment, so I felt like they never cared about me, so I was always just, like, had the freedom to just, like, be outside super late as, like, a little kid, and, like, they didn't care. So, like, I don't know, that kind of gave me survival skills, like, like, I know how to remember what street I'm on, and I know how to, like, remember my path so I'll never get lost, or, like, just things, like, awareness of how the world works, I guess.
More, or to kind of, like, build that, flesh that out a little bit, I literally wrote down, like, some of the stuff from your email that was, like, you had said, like, understanding the effects of generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had mentioned, like, in understanding that in the context of, like, the immediate household, mm-hmm. and then had said, like, negatively impacts people's ability to develop healthy senses of identity,
yeah.
self-worth, and good emotional management yeah. skills as a child.
Definitely. Like, now that I grew up in my own family situation, I see it everywhere. It's like, no one's not impacted by it. Like, even if you yourself grow up in a happy, healthy, loving, but structured home, like, you, there's still always going to be someone in our current society who kind of didn't really have that. And there's varying degrees of it. Like, someone could be like, oh, I was never abused, but also, like, maybe your mom didn't communicate with you, like, she was passive aggressive, or, like, she never said what was on her mind. She would, like, give you the silent treatment, and you thought that was totally normal, and that's how you communicate now, and you don't see that as an issue, or that's just an example. But it's like, it affects her mom was just a single mom. Everyone, I feel,
and,
like
go out and, like, be out in the town, just, like, walking around,
I think,
for hours and hours. And I think after, like, a year, I wasn't really, there was, like, a fight that we got into, because we used to do this thing where, like, we'd steal people's, like, bicycle keys. Like in Japan, people would just, like, leave their bike lock key in their bike because it was just so safe. And my friend was like, let's take them. And I was like, okay. And then after, like, we had, like, a pouch, and we filled it with just, like, bicycle keys. We were in second grade. And then I was, like, looking at this, and I was like, I don't feel good about this. Like, why are we doing this? And then we got into an argument, and I think I, like, I don't know what I did with that pouch, but I just felt, like, really bad at the end of it. That girl also stole my bike, too. I, like, lost my bike, and I was like, I don't know where it is. And it was gone for, like, months, and then I was finally like, hey, we should go out and walk around and look for it. And then, like, we were just, like, out and about, and then she returned with the bike. And I was like, whoa, how'd you find it? How'd you even know to look for it? And she, like, gave some random excuse, and I didn't really put two and two together until I was older. I was like, wait, she totally stole my bike, and...
it just appeared.
Yeah.
So you had a formative year in Saitama.
Yeah, Saitama. I also experienced, like, the full brunt of, like, kids' racial biases in Japan. Like, I had, in Japan, especially in elementary school, you're expected to walk to school with the people in your neighborhood, like, similar age groups who go to the same school as you. So you, like, walk together to school. And I had, like, a group of girls that we all walked to school with. And then one day, the girls weren't walking with us. It was just one girl. And then she was, like, crying and, like, telling me, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't even want to do it. Like, they made me do it. And I was like, oh, it's okay. Not really knowing what she was talking about. Because, like, I was still language barrier, too. Like, when I moved that year, I didn't really speak much of Japanese. So just, like, things were just, like, on a different cognitive level for me. But, like, I understood, like, she was upset, she was crying, I didn't really know what was going on. I went to school, and then the teachers, like, pulled me to the side, and they're like, we're so sorry, what happened? Like, and I was like, oh, okay. Not really knowing what happened, but then by the end of the day, I kind of, like, had an inkling. So I went home, and I was like, hey, like, did I get, like, a letter or something? And my mom was like, oh, yeah, look. And, like, there were these sheets of origami paper filled to the brim with, like, filthy foreigner, go back to your country, you should die, just, like, and it was written by those girls. And I didn't really understand, I don't know, I didn't know how to, like, process it. I think I just was like, oh, okay, that happened. And then I never really spoke to those people much after that, like, the girls who did that. But I still wanted to be friends, like, I want to be included, and I felt, like, bad that, like, I don't know. So, like, I think some months after that happened, I ended up, like, going to one of the girls' apartments, and they were just, like, really mean. They were like, oh, you can't see the code to my apartment complex. Like, you're the only one who can't see it. Like, and just, like, subtle, weird things that I was like, okay, well, I don't even want to hang out with you guys if you're going to, like, be mean to me like this. So, yeah.
Do you... I don't know if... I assume that's comfortable, but if you want, I wanted to offer that if you want a towel to sit on.
I actually have a picnic blanket that I completely forgot about. I'm just out here. No thoughts in my brain. It's actually Zodiac themed.
No thoughts in my brain. Zodiac themed.
Perfect.
So that sounds pretty intense.
Yeah, it was a really intense year, and like while that was happening, my dad was just kind of like on his decline of like antisocialism. Like growing up as a super young age, I remember him being super funny and charismatic and just like this great, like he was my dad. And then I don't know, just as life got harder, I don't think my parents were really prepared to be parents. They just, like, my mom just got pregnant and they were like, okay, we have 3 kids now. And oh, financial responsibility. Oh, like social inclusion. And my dad is probably autistic. It kind of runs in my family. But he never really wanted to look into that for himself. So, like, it was really strange seeing him struggle socially, but then, like, just like completely remove himself from all the situations that he was like being hurt by. So he just became reclusive and like be on the computer all the time playing video games and stuff. So like that was really starting to happen that year too. So just like a very strange year where I was kind of like, oh, kind of growing up, life was like, this is your life. I was like, okay. And then we moved after a year back to the States.
And what year was that? Or what?
That was, I think I was like 7 through 8 years old. So 2008 or 2009, probably.
And where did you move to in the States?
Yeah. We moved from Saitama after a year to Coalinga, California, which is a tiny Central Valley town, just like so in the buttfuck of nowhere, just like dry ass hills and cows and like oil rigs. That was also formative but fun for me, at least. I moved after being in Japan for a year. I was finally like getting accustomed to the language. I was finally like aware of what we were learning in class, and I was actually finally able to like read a textbook in Japanese, and then move back to America again. And it was like the last quarter of third grade, because like the school years are kind of different, because like in Japan the school year starts in spring, but in America it starts like in the fall. So there's that like slight, like because of my age, even though I was supposed to, if I had stayed in Japan, I would have finished second grade and started third grade. But then because of the timing that we moved, I was in like the last semester of third grade in America. So here I was again, like I had forgotten English. I'm like all behind my peers because I can't even like read at an English level correctly. So like back in this like, oh, I don't know what's going on. What are people saying? Like just that weird cognitive thing. But I adapted.
You had no other choice.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, I'm here.
Did you have like a sense at that point of feeling kind of like on your own in a way?
I think it was just so inherent that I never really realized the impact of it. Like it's just like ingrained in my being. Just like this independence kind of.
Just unconsciously it's like, oh yeah, this is what I do. I fend for myself, or I gotta be the person to take care of it.
Or just adapting to whatever, like not even realizing, oh, like this is a weird situation to be in. It's like, no, this is just where I am. Like not even, because like as a kid you don't really realize the impact of like how crazy these situations are. It's just like, okay, that happened, what's for dinner? There's nothing in the fridge. Okay, I'll eat sugar.
I mean, I can't personally relate to that, like, chain of chain of actions in that quite the same way, but I suppose in some other way I can kind of go back into like kid logic of just like, okay, on to the next thing, or like on to the next kind of practical thing that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, and I think because of just like the absurdity of things that I was going through without the context of like an adult mind, I think it made me like super optimistic just about anything. Like, because like no matter where I moved, I always made friends and I always like could find, like, even though I experienced like bullying and like stuff like that, like moving back to Kalinga, like I was still super optimistic and like extroverted and like always hanging out with people after school and stuff.
I remember you were talking about like being extroverted as a kid in our like first recording.
Yeah. So I still had that like inherent just like optimism.
And how long were you in Kalinga for?
For 4 years. We moved back to Japan in 2011. The timeline isn't. Yeah. Well, yeah, the years kind of. I think maybe 3 years then, because I was there fourth grade and fifth grade. Okay, maybe only 2 years. I don't think I was there for sixth grade. Yeah.
What prompted going back to Japan?
It was always my parents, like, oh, I lost my job, I can go back to Japan and teach English. Or like, oh, I lost a job, let's go back to America because I can be a substitute teacher. It was always just, like, lack of job stability.
Okay, so they were just, like, it was always based around jobs and job hunting and just like, oh, if things aren't working here, we can just move to another country.
Yes, exactly. And also credit card debt too. Like my dad was like, oh, financial responsibility, credit card debt is a real thing. Well, if we move back to Japan, I don't have to like pay it for a certain amount of
That's intense. So you went back to Japan for like sixth grade.
And then stayed there until I graduated high school, and then that's when I was like, okay, goodbye everyone, I'm going back to America to like begin my own life.
Can you say more about that, like that sense of like just thinking about that choice and how it kind of like aligned with the end of high school? Had you been thinking about that like leading up to it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that final move to Japan was, like, what really broke me, kind of. Because up till then, I had, like, this unlimited, boundless optimism and extroversion. But 2011, I think, I'm pretty sure that was the year we moved. And then I think puberty, too, was just, like, so hard. Like, leaving this, like, innocent, naive childhood and then developing this like sense of like who you are and trying to develop that in like a home where like your parents don't give a shit about you and like these kids are bullying you at school, and like that was just really hard. So I think that, and just like finally kind of waking up to the reality of how fucked up my family situation was like, okay, like, well, I can't be here forever. Because the longer I stay, the more it's just going to, like, fuck me up, too. So I think the goal was always to leave my home as soon as I was 18.
The deepest level, it makes people have to build mechanisms to protect themselves out of, like, fear. And that kind of stifles a person to, like, be their authentic self. Kind of like going back to my whole relationship with communication. Like, that was how it showed up for me, but, like, everyone has different ways in how it shows up in them.
I feel like you're about to say something else, but okay. I immediately think of like, does everyone talk about like the negative impact of their like childhood, to what extent are people, like, is that just sort of a common conversation?
Definitely not. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of, like, how kind of debilitating it is. Like, everyone, it's just kind of, like, normal to, like, have not so great, like, have super rigid. It's just kind of normalized, like, not having, I don't know, I feel like I have, like, an idea of what it means to, like, have a good, healthy connection with a person, and a lot of families don't have that, and so we kind of, like, carry that out into our personal lives and just, like, have, like, weird, I'm like, you're okay with that? Like, that's, I don't know, like, boundaries and healthy communication and, I don't know.
Is that...
exchanges of energy.
Is that something that, like, with all of your close friends who've, like, had conversations about, like, not necessarily, like, let's, like, exchange traumas, but, you know, like covering it for the sake of, like, that it kind of establishes, like, a safe ground, or, like, you know, if you can share that with them, then it's like, oh, yeah. You can, like...
I think I'm always talking about it just because I'm, like, super passionate about it. It's not like, let's do it together. It's just kind of like, this is me, this is what I think about all the time. And then I naturally spend more time with people who already have that, like, mutual understanding. Like, yeah, I totally understand what you mean. And then we both kind of, like, share that level of understanding to some degree.
Yeah.
Of, like, yeah, the world's kind of weird sometimes.
Honestly, like,
my family situation was,
pick your flavor of, like, how to explain,
was like,
that.
Okay, like, well, I can't be here forever. Because the longer I stay, the more it's just going to, like, fuck me up, too. So I think the goal was always to leave my home as soon as I was 18. And also, like, the financial aspect of it, too. Like, I can't really afford college. Like, there's no money for me to go anywhere. So I have to, like, either get scholarships or just, like, find a way. And so I was considering, there's no military in Japan. But there is, like a national protective service thing that is kind of like the military. Like, Japan swore off war after World War II because of just, like, the atrocities that happened and the atrocities that they themselves committed to. But so, because that college would be free to, like, go there to, like, become a part of this, like, Japanese naval force. It's, I don't know what the translation would be in English.
Do you want to say it in Japanese? If you...
Boe daigaku. Boe, yeah. So, like, yeah. I was, like, pretty determined, but then I think I just, like, lost interest in the idea. Because, like, I wasn't passionate about it. I just wanted to, like, be self-sufficient. And I would have to, like, be in that school, and it was, like, a boarding school, and I'd have to, like, wake up at 5 a.m. to, like, do push-ups and stuff, and it was that kind of, like, yeah, it's free, but at what cost?
And why not just go to, like, Tokyo?
Well, financially, I just couldn't see myself doing that, like, supporting myself while going through college. Because, like, I need my own apartment, and I need, like, all these things. So I think, I don't know how the plan really arose, but I was like, oh, I should just go back to America. And my grandma had some money saved up for me, like $2,000 maybe. So I used that to, like, go to Tokyo and renew my passport and then buy my own ticket to America and then pay for my extra, like, belongings, because you can only carry so many things onto the plane. So I, like, shoved all my stuff in cardboard boxes, and then I, like, had a layover flight and, like, landed in Oregon, and I looked at my boxes. I was like, oh my gosh, they're falling apart. And, like, I asked one of, like, people at the airport, like, do you have, like, duct tape? Like, my stuff's coming out of my boxes. I was like, oh yeah, and, like, taped all my boxes and then landed in Fresno. Yeah, I think the plan was, like, to live in California for, like, a year or so until I could qualify to become, like, a California resident to get to go to community college at, like, the reduced rate. Because, like, if you hadn't lived in California for, like, a year, it'll be more expensive.
And that was the time in Fresno, working in restaurants, saving money, and tattooing up a storm.
Yeah.
What's your grandmother's name?
Suzanne Thorson. Sue.
and she sounds like she had like a positive presence in your life. Was that the case, or am I putting not?
Yes and no. As a child, she was super loving, super supportive. I owe a lot of like my creative love for like art to her, because she really was like, I just remember her helping us like do art projects. Like we'd melt, like we had this like weird thing where we could like make art with melted crayons and stuff, or like we'd go outside and pick flower petals and like make dresses for dolls and stuff. But then like growing up was just hard for me, because I saw just like how interconnected, like a person can love you the best that they can, but it's still like not good. Like it's still kind of can be harmful. Like the whole, like the fact that she raised my dad, and I could see how that was like affecting things, and like how she was dealing with my own relationship with my parents. Like she was, I didn't feel like I could be myself, or like I felt, I don't know, the older I grew up, the more I felt like fearful around her. Without like, she didn't do it with malice or anything. It was just like, yeah, different levels of awareness, I guess.
Was she, I mean, I'm like, I'm trying to get a kind of a picture of like, if there were like stable, positive people growing up, and mostly like I have not heard like that there have been them. I'm trying to get a sense of like who were the people, if there were any like that were like, oh, these people are trustworthy, or like these people are like stable and stable or stable enough.
Probably each set of my grandparents, like the grandparents in Fresno, my American grandparents, because they had a job and they, or not a job, but they had like a house and they had food. So to me, that was stability. And then in Japan, my Japanese grandparents, even though they had their own set of just like crazy shit going on, like they still had a house and they always had food. So in that sense, like that was the most stable in my head.
So then you moved out here, spending time with the grandparents.
But then I left after 2 months. As soon as I could afford my apartment, I was like, I can't, I need my own space. Like, I can't live under your roof anymore.
And that was the start of independent living, independent Lily.
Mm-hmm. Best years of my life.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah. Very formative. Formative? Or just like, I finally had space to process everything. Like, being in my own company and no one to worry about or cater to or defend myself from, like, just being in my own space was just so what I needed.
Did you feel, I'm thinking about myself and my experiences of, like, when I've had my own space, that I've felt, like, more relaxed, or having the feeling of like, I think I actually might be able to collect my thoughts a little bit right now.
Exactly.
What was if you had an experience like that, what was that like for you, like kind of letting things settle a bit, or like getting distance, or
it just felt peaceful, and like I could let my body just like rest. And like when I was a little kid, I always had this like fantasy of like, I wish I could freeze time and I could just like go in my own room and just like do whatever I wanted and not have to worry about going to school the next morning or like doing this thing tomorrow. Like I wish I could just freeze time. And I feel like that I got my wish, like as an adult being in my apartment. Like yeah, I still went to work during the day, but when I was home, like that was just my time, and like I didn't have to cater to anyone.
What would you do with your free time, with your frozen time?
My frozen time, a lot of listening to music, a lot of smoking weed. I don't do that anymore because it makes me anxious. I never owned a TV, so like not a lot of watching things. Making art Yeah. Especially during the pandemic, like, I really was, like, focusing on making art. Yeah. Thrifting. I love thrifting. I still love thrifting.
What kind of art were you making?
Like, a lot of Photoshop stuff. Like, I would take pictures and then, like, make, like, weird self portrait digital collage things. Yeah.
Do you think in the show notes we can link to, like,
yeah,
some of them?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah?
That was, like, my embarrassing era where I had, like, a mushroom bowl cut. It was so bad. And I still had, like, baby fat on my face. And it was, like... But it was... Yeah. If I didn't... I don't know. I look at my art back then and I'm like, whoa, there's some cool things. Even though... I don't know. Sometimes I cringe when I look at it, but sometimes I'm like, whoa, that's some cool stuff that I made.
Like... not necessarily, is it like anything particular, or is it just like seeing the arrangement of the collage and yeah, you're just like, oh, that's,
yeah, like the colors I used, and yeah,
it's cool. I'm also thinking about how you like in the mirror, like, and how is it once per day ish like kind of around like grooming time that you look in the mirror, or what's your relationship with the mirror like?
I used to look in the mirror a lot, and I think that is kind of symbolic now that I'm thinking about it, of just, like, me wanting to see myself, like, who is, like, how do I perceive myself? Like, how should I? Like, I don't know how to perceive myself, so I'm, like, looking in the mirror for answers, like, who is that? Like, how do, what? I can't wrap my mind around it. And now it's more, like, how do I want to be perceived? Like, oh, how should I do my makeup? Or like, oh, my skin's a little like reddish, maybe I should put foundation on. Or like, oh, I have some baby hairs, let me just like fix that up a bit. Or like, just stuff. And then I don't spend too much time. I used to take a lot of like pictures of myself too, like just selfies and like self portraits, I guess. I don't find myself doing that as often as I did when I was like younger, and I was more like lost, I guess. Like, just had an obsession of just like, I don't know who I am.
Hmm. But then that kind of faded away into like just
into more
practicality.
Not more like more intentionally like putting it out there who I want to be, or like who I am.
I'm also thinking about how you were talking about like looking in the mirror when you were growing up, and now I'm like connecting that to this like self-portrait
definitely
thing,
and just like trying to understand who I even am.
And I mean it, like I'm trying to think about it in like the sense of like the abstract of like everyone goes through this, but then like kind of hearing the particulars of your story and like trying to think about how it might be. Like,
I feel like I needed to do it. Like, it was... A lot of it was from a sense of, like, desperation. Or just, like... Like, I don't know. I feel like my experience gives me a level of, like... I don't know. People who don't go through stuff like this don't really have a sense of urgency. Which is nice. Like, that's amazing. But I feel like my experience is... I feel like I need to, like... have a... base level of just like strong intention, or just like I need to know exactly what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and to know that it matters, so I'm not like wasting my time like doing something that is like so silly and doesn't really do anything.
Can you just riff on that a little bit more?
Like it, I need to know that what I'm doing is aligned with who I want to be and the life I want to create. Yeah. Even if it's just like laying in bed because I need to rest, like that's something I'm doing for myself because I know that I need to rest.
But there's, I'm curious about lots of things, but like the urgency.
Yeah.
Can you say more about that too?
Yeah. Cause like, we all have only one life, so I want to, like, make something of it, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Just, like, that primal survival urgency of just, like, I'm not just gonna, like, float around and act like nothing's, like... I mean, yeah, nothing's serious and life's fun and, like, it's like a game and I love, yeah, definitely that. But also, like, I'm here to learn and grow and evolve, too, like, on a soul level.
Do you... I don't want to use the word, like, plan for your life, but when you think about, like, things that you would like to be or become in the future, what kind of things, like, come to mind for you?
I want a homestead property with, like, sustainable, like, I want gardens and, like, I want to reuse my gray water to, like, water my plants and have this, like, beautiful home with lots of natural sunlight and, like, a creek running through my property and, like, yeah.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. And quails. I love quails.
Oh, quail. Okay. How'd they get into the picture?
California.
Okay. I don't know enough about California to know that quails are an integral part of our world here.
Yeah. I think if you go more in, like, Northern California and you're, like, more in, like, nature, like, you'll see quails and it's, like, I love them. They're so, like, they're special. They have the little thing on their head.
Their finder, their antenna.